This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I can see the Empire State Building from this window, and ordinarily I can't see that in Denver, which means episode number 8 of MILB.com's The Show Before the Show is a very, very weird one.
Yeah, you came to New York and I went out to Colorado and we're just switching sides.
Just traded places? Yep. This is so strange.
Yep.
Hi, Jake.
Hey.
We're in the same...
Welcome to New York. I'm not actually in Colorado.
I could touch your shirt right now.
If you can hear me better, it's because I'm speaking into a real microphone that Tyler brought in just for us.
We're importing our technological equipment and everything. Yeah, it's our first joint session of the Minor League Baseball Podcast, The Show Before the Show. So welcome in. Episode number 8 today. We got a ton coming up on the show. But most importantly, I mean, you know, we're in the same room. And that's the most exciting thing about it, obviously.
Yeah, we're going to take you out and get you a real slice of New York pizza after and... With cheese. You won't have to specify. You'll just say, give me a plain slice of pizza.
I'm going
to
say a plain slice of pizza, and they're somehow going to know that it needs cheese on it, Jake. Also, every time I come here, I want to act out that scene from The Office where Michael says, I'm going to go to my favorite New York pizza joint, and then walks into a Sparrow. It's always my one thing that I want to do.
If you're looking for, we got a Ray's pizza that is right there down the block. There's another one, two more down the block.
Famous original Ray's?
Yes, famous original Ray's. All like 18 of them.
Huh.
Yes.
It's another,
I don't think either of them,
it's another TV moment.
I don't think either of them are the actual Ray's pizza.
Well, now I know. Now I got some food down in the basement today here at lovely Chelsea Market. It's, you know, we're in like a real – this is so much nicer than like, you know, my bedroom where I have my desk and normally record the show. This conference room is a lot more exciting.
I never pictured you in your bedroom.
In the big city. I rarely have clothes on when we do the podcast. No, I'm kidding. God, that's a horrible –
This has been a very different experience than I thought it was.
This is so weird now. But welcome in. It's episode number 8 and big shocker. We have a ton of promotions to talk about and we'll dive into it with 3 strikes. One guy making a season debut yesterday. Yoan Moncada makes his Boston Red Sox professional debut, joins a full season team, scores a couple of runs in his first game, makes a good defensive play. Your thoughts on his debut last night with Greenville?
Yeah, it was, I got to see a little bit of the highlights after the game. I didn't get to watch live, but I saw they had a nice leaping catch that I saw him in spring training for a few times and looked a little more comfortable. I mean, I saw him his second and third day, I think, on the backfields, just practicing with Greenville at that point. I saw some quotes from Darren Fenster, the manager in Greenville, who worked out with him in spring training and hasn't seen him since, saying he thought that Moncada looked a little more comfortable. Things I saw when we were in spring training was some things that Fenster kind of mentioned in our story with talking to Ash Marshall after the game. Had been a little bit stiff and a little bit maybe uncomfortable at the plate in spring training, and Fenster said he thought he looked much better in batting practice and put together some pretty good at-bats last night. No hits, but drew a walk and saw plenty of pitches. Reviews on his defense, according to Fenster, have been a little bit smoother, a little more confident. I think that was something he showed a lot of promise in spring training, but looked maybe a little bit rusty. The hands were just not quite getting to the ball the way that you'd expect a guy to, but I think that's just from having a year and change laid off. But for a 19-year-old to get to full-season ball, and interested to see how long he stays there. I imagine he could stay there for a little while, especially if they were taking it so slow, getting him to that level. But excited to have him. He's going to be on Milk TV through Sunday. Greenville has a pretty nice camera set up, so he'll be on there pretty often, so get to take a pretty good look at him this year.
That's going to be the fun thing to watch. I mean, especially after that long of a layoff, is seeing him kind of come into his own, because it's not just that you're adjusting to a new level or you're adjusting to, you know, the cultural acclimation, all that kind of stuff for a guy like him, but the fact that he hasn't played baseball for over a year, that's the biggest thing, is when you get back into game action, it takes so much longer to get, because there's so many, you know, very delicate skill sets that you need to have back all working in harmony. That's what I think is going to be the most interesting thing about watching Moncada as he gets going over the next few weeks, is how he's going to handle that transition. And, you know, for a guy like that, I mean, with the talent that he has and the experience that he has already at 19, I don't think it'll take him too long, but obviously it's been a pretty long road for him to get to this point already. So that'll be fun to watch over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and physically, just for a 19-year-old, you don't see 19-year-olds that big.
Yeah.
Just looks like a monster.
I remember you saying that at spring training.
Yeah.
And that's some of those guys.
It's incredible.
Where you can just watch them and see, like, that guy's got it.
Yep. And quick feet, and just they don't make a lot of athletes like that. We're going to move on to strike two. Another guy who just got a promotion on Monday after he started on Sunday is Dodgers right-handed prospect Jose De Leon. De Leon's been a guy that's really popped up over the last year. He was a 24th round draft pick in 2013, drafted in the 24th round, and really was not a guy that was on anybody's radar. He's out of Puerto Rico, went to Colegio San Antonio, and spent his first offseason between 2013 and 2014 really improving his conditioning, and came back, did some work with the Dodgers coaches, working his mechanics. He went from a guy who was thrown in the high 80s or low 90s. Now he's sitting 93, 94 consistently. And the numbers in the Cal League were just outrageous for him. He had almost 14 strikeouts per nine innings. The ERA was 1.67 and seven starts. Just couldn't have been more dominant. I talked to the Rancho Cucamonga pitching coach last night, Bill Seamus. One thing he mentioned I thought was interesting that I watched some video to kind of see what he was talking about was De Leon apparently has a lot of deception. It's not just that the stuff is good, but he hides the ball really well. And one guy who I was really reminded of when I was watching him throw is Yusmeiro Petit, the Dodgers pitcher, who I know Eno Saris at Fangraphs has written a lot about. He calls it the invisible that Petit throws, where he as he's coming and he's throwing, he kind of hides the ball behind his elbow. So the hitters see the ball and the ball disappears, and then it all of a sudden just shoots, almost looks like out of his elbow. It looks like De Leon kind of creates a similar effect. They have very similar motions, especially the arm action. So I think that's a thing that's been helping him, and that's something that the team has said. He definitely notices that hitters don't seem to jump on his ball as well as you'd expect at 93, 94. His fastball velocity almost plays up more than that just because he hides the baseball so well.
At strikeout-to-walk ratio, I mean, he's got 58 strikeouts in total this year to 8 walks. And if you're going to dominate the Cal League, that's one of the things you have to do is make sure you're commanding everything. The numbers would be absurd enough as they are, but the fact that they come in the California League where nobody throws like that, I mean, that's what makes it more impressive to me. And this is a guy who, I mean, even last year when we saw him in Great Lakes, it was like every single time out, you would see De Leon, you know, 4 or 5 innings in, he'd have 8 or 9 strikeouts, only giving up a couple of hits, maybe a run here and there. He's that good. And when we see Julio Urias come back, that rotation in Tulsa, I mean, that team's already been host to a lot of talent this season. I mean, Corey Seager came through and all that. That is going to be a fun 1-2 punch to watch when those guys get going together, because that's the Dodgers, we've talked about this before, the Dodgers have so much talent at the major league level. They've got so much coming up at the minor league level, too. If you're a National League West fan of a team that's not the Dodgers, it kind of scares you for the next 10, 15 years because it's going to be a pretty good run, I think, for the Dodgers.
You mentioned Urias in there, something we should mention. I don't think we were going to talk about it, but should mention he's having eye surgery next week. He's going to have just a cosmetic surgery. He had a tumor in his eye, a benign tumor, that he's already had 3 surgeries on the eye just to get it to where he can see and it can function. This is just cosmetic. It's something that's elective, and he's deciding to do now. The Dodgers open. It'll keep his pitch count down, so he should be out. So he's expected to be back with Tulsa before July, so he'll miss about a month of total action there. One other thing I did want to mention about De Leon, too, is the reviews, everything I had read and heard before this year was that his slider was more advanced than his changeup. And talking to Seamus, he actually thought it was the other way around. He wants to see him maybe sharpen up the slider, but the changeup was outstanding. Just the way it worked out was Rancho saw a ton of left-handed bats this year, and De Leon handed those really with aplomb. He had a 30-2 strikeout-to-walk ratio against left-handed hitters as a right-handed guy, and he was mainly going fastball changeup to get there. So the changeup is not a concern. The repertoire is pretty well balanced. He's a guy who was on the up and up.
30-2
yep.
Strikeout-to-walk numbers.
Good.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
It's pretty good. Strike three in this week's edition of Three Strikes is another promotion and a big promotion, a big step forward. Wilmer Defoe is headed up to the big leagues. He's only played 14 games above the Class A advanced level, but the Washington Nationals are summoning him, a guy that a lot of people have looked at for a long time as really an above-average shortstop. If he sticks there, if he plays there, he's a major league guy at that position. But this, I mean, this is a big step. It's a big jump. And I already saw a lot on Twitter today about, you know, don't evaluate him based on just his major league first impression, because he's still young, he's still got a lot to work on, but it obviously shows you what the Nationals think of him.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they utilize him and how this benefits both the team and him. I think they're mostly calling him up because they're kind of in a 40-man roster squeeze, and he's already on the roster and can fill in. He's a high contact player, so his transition from the minors to the majors should be easier than for a guy who's a big strikeout power guy. He can play a couple positions. He's played shortstop and second base, so he has some flexibility, but the Nationals have plenty of middle infield middle infielders as it is. So I imagine he'll be there just until Anthony Rendon comes back in the near future and then get sent back down to Double A or Triple A. It's interesting you mentioned the defense. Defoe had played second base and shortstop last year, and I think there were some people who had questions over where his long-term home was going to be, and I think a lot of those were because the Nationals weren't really signaling that they were comfortable with him at shortstop. But talking to a couple of South Atlanta League managers who saw him last year and some other people who saw him, they really thought he had the tools to shine at shortstop, and have featured him in the D-list series we do. And he was a guy who got a lot of plaudits for his athleticism and things. There's refinements to be made there. He's a little rough around the edges, but certainly athletic enough to stick it short if the Nationals play him there full-time, which is what they've done this year. So I'd expect that that's something they're going to keep developing to potentially have him replace Ian Desmond at some point.
Well, and even if he's not going to see regular playing time, the Nationals don't have a spot for him immediately. Just being able to get that experience and be at the major league level, be going to the ballpark every day, all the stuff that guys talk about in big league camp and spring training when they get invited, apply that in a regular season setting, and that's still a pretty big experience for a kid who will see a little bit of action. You know, his full major league career probably isn't here just yet, but it's going to be fun to watch, especially to see a kid jump that high, make that big of a promotion going into, what the Nationals hope is a pretty long and productive career for him. So that'll wrap up this week's edition of Three Strikes here on episode number 8 of MILB.com's The Show Before the Show podcast. This is so weird. I'm seeing all of these people for the first time who I vaguely recognize from Twitter and, Sam Dykstra joins us. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how's it going? Good thing I shaved. Now I look like my actual Twitter profile picture.
I did not. That's true. I would not have recognized you. Yeah. Like, who is this bearded guy? Yeah. I don't get it. Jake and I both look like we're, battening down for a maritime voyage.
I should have done it.
Making our Colorado guests feel welcome.
Yeah, I know.
I got a mountain man beard. Sam, welcome, man. It's this is one of the coolest stories that I think we've had on the site this season. It explains something that is a very different. I'm going to make my second Office reference of the show already today, but there's like that episode where Michael says to Oscar from accounting, explain this to me like I'm a 5-year-old. And that's what I needed with the Super 2 cutoff explanation, and your piece is terrific. Give people an idea of what exactly the Super 2 thing means for players, the qualifications for it, deadlines for it, all that kind of stuff. Tell us about this whole concept of Super 2.
Okay, so just to start off, we were kind of talking about this before I came on here. Just to really, really dumb it down, it saves your team money. That's what it comes down to. What the Super 2 means is that it deals with arbitration. And that, after accruing 3 years of service time in the majors, players get to go to arbitration instead of being on minimum contracts anymore. But there's a special 22% who have the 22% highest amount of service time amongst those with only 2 years who get to go to arbitration a year early. So what a lot of teams do, specifically with prospects, is they want to avoid getting Super 2 status. They don't want to have to go to that arbitration 1 year early, because arbitration means hundreds of thousands more dollars, if not millions more dollars. So what they're trying to do is they delay guys typically towards mid-June, but we don't know exactly when that cutoff will be until years later.
The deadline is sort of artificially established, and it kind of floats. It's not like it's just one day, basically, like everybody's waiting for June 14th or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That kind of moves around.
Yeah, it's kind of like telling somebody, bring enough water to fill this cup 20%. By the way, I'm not going to tell you how big the cup is.
It's a good announcement.
Yeah, you don't know exactly what the cutoff is going to be until years later, so teams play it safe and they just wait until June. It could be late May, depending on the class size. But they figured out it's mid, late June, and that's when we typically saw – we've seen guys like Gregory Polanco, Will Myers 2 years ago, who get called up around that time. And then hopefully down the line those teams will avoid getting the early arbitration year because of it.
So who are guys this year that this might be affecting? I know teams won't necessarily confirm this publicly, but who do you suspect is at least being affected maybe a little by this?
Yeah, this is one of those things that's really like a third rail. Teams just refuse to acknowledge it and always say they need more seasoning because it's easier to say. We saw that last week, but when I was writing it up, it was actually perfectly timed because the Indians had said Francisco Lindor, specifically Super 2 is not a reason why we're holding him down. For all we know, that could actually be the reason, but it's easier for them to say, he's a guy, he's not quite hitting 300. He still needs some more seasoning at AAA. He hasn't done all the right things yet. That's easy for them to say. And then come mid-June, he's ready now, and we could see him back up there, especially with the Indians' defensive problems. And as we know, Lindor is super on defense and could be a big boost to them. Also, the other guy everybody's talking about, everybody's complaining. I had today, he had his first AAA homer, and somebody tweeted at Jeff Lanau saying, call him up, was Carlos Correa. He was destroying AA pitching. He's doing equally well in AAA now. The Astros don't particularly have strong options at shortstop, especially with Jed Lowry being down until the All-Star break. But he's another guy, they just brought him up, so they want him to get him a couple games at AAA. And it probably won't be till mid-June that we see him get called up just for that arbitration reasons.
Sam, what was it like for you researching this story? Because this is one of the most complicated transactional topics. Did you know a decent amount about Super 2 before you started? Because the way I like it is the way that you started the piece is actually quoting the actual language that describes it. Yeah. And then he said, like, all right, in layman's terms, here's what this means. But what was it like for you researching this whole thing? Because it's a bear of a topic.
I kind of recommend it to people is actually going through the CBA. And when there's something you don't understand, the CBA is online for anybody to find. It's not exactly hard. You just literally Google Major League Baseball CBA and it's there. And just look through it yourself and try to put it into words you'll understand or ask one of us, anything like that.
Ask Sam, don't ask me. Ask the smart writers.
I know. It was kind of fun to play lawyer for a little bit and try to figure out what all these words mean.
Lead counsel Sam Dykstra.
Yeah. It's just one of those. Super 2 has always been one of those things that everybody's just like, oh yeah, Super 2 concerns, it's whatever. And I don't think anybody had actually sat down and written this is what it means for guys, except for they won't come up till later.
Yeah, you want to address, you got one comment on this story. One comment was from Suffer for Tribe, who we assume was somebody who just Googled Francisco Lindor and stumbled upon this. The comment was, try as you might, I'm still confused. Would you like to address?
Yeah, I'm just going to go back to the explaining in five words, and it saves your team money. Just be happy with that, and if it's still confusing, just be happy that your team's going to be able to put millions of dollars aside to spend on free agents elsewhere. Sorry, Cleveland guy, if you still don't understand it. I don't know how else really to put it, except for I think it was 2,000 words. I tried my best.
It's one of those things where, when you try that much, if you don't get it at the end of it, you're probably not going to get it.
Yeah,
anyway.
Just be happy it's going to save your team money. You're not going to see Lindor for a bit, but it's fine. They're doing it for a reason.
Francisco will be in Columbus for a little bit. It's fine.
Just go with it.
Well, and that's the interesting thing, too, that you brought up is we heard comments from the Indians this week that, there's still some things he needs to work on. He's progressing on field, he's progressing off field, but he's not ready just yet. And we've heard that. I mean, we heard it with Gregory Polanco. We've heard it with guys, even just in delaying arbitration status with, with the Chris Bryants of the world and those guys. But is this something that you think is an issue that will come up again the way that it's structured now in the next CBA? Is there still kind of that cloud that surrounds it, the way that it is with a situation like Chris Bryant or all those types of things? Does it seem like it's something that'll be debated again down the road, the Super 2 status?
Well, yeah. I don't know about Super 2 so much. Players would obviously love money earlier than what they're getting. Chris Bryant's, it seems like it was a horse of a different color because it's adding another year of service time to him. They get another year before he gets the big money of free agency. Arbitration, you're bargaining against yourself, essentially. There's no outside offers. It doesn't seem like there's a big swell. It's already changed. It used to be 17%. Now it's up to 22%. So maybe we could see it bumped up to 27% because that really pushes teams to say, listen, we can't wait for a top prospect until July. That might be a little much if they push it back even further. So there has been some movement in the past. I haven't seen any big groundswell for changes quite yet. But it could be on the table. CBA negotiations, everything's on the table, and we'll see what happens.
But you're going to have to learn your Super 2 because it might be here for a while.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it doesn't happen until 2016. I think that's when this is up. So it'll be a little while.
So read your stuff. Get up to speed, Suffer for Tribe guy. This year, those are kind of the two biggest names, Correa and Francisco Lindor, and Jose Peraza is another one who Sam threw into this piece about Super 2. So go educate yourselves on this Super 2 stuff because it's really fascinating stuff. It is kind of complicated and tough to understand, but that's why we have smart guys like Sam.
I feel like I should have gone to law school, so I can maybe explain it slightly better. But this is cheaper. It all comes down to money. Yeah, it's cheaper not going to law school and trying this.
Sam will not be Super 2 eligible.
No, I will not be Super 2 eligible.
The answer to 99 out of 100 questions is money. Sam, good work, man.
Yeah, no, it was great seeing you doing this in the flesh. Like, what?
This is awesome.
I know, this is different. I wish we could do this all the time.
Thanks, man. We continue parading the all-stars of MILB.com through this sweet conference room that we have, and the man, the myth, the legend, Benjamin Hill joins us. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you. I feel welcomed. It's great to be here.
It's very exciting to see you. This is, so just as a random backstory, we'll let Jake in on. You and I met in 2011 when you came to Myrtle Beach.
Yes.
To do a road trip through the Carolina League. And then when I applied for this job, came out and interviewed, I said hello to you one day, and you said, what are you doing here? And I said, no, 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 trying to get a job. And now we've come full circle. Now we're on a podcast. This is like a very meta moment.
Yeah. Well, you were just talking about the first time we met, and now it's been 4 years.
There it is. That is the king of puns. We didn't even talk about that before this segment. I didn't set you up for it. You just nailed that.
Yeah, and spawn.
It's all day, every day. Yeah, this is what New York is like, Tyler.
I know! All this day, is amazing! Every day. If I could just sit around Ben's puns all day.
Ben won't even be in the conversation. Everybody else will be talking. You just hear him just making puns
himself. Ben just pops over a wall and says something witty and disappears again.
Puts his headphones back in.
That's exactly it. Keeping myself.
I was on a plane all day and just now got to tackle promo preview for this week, but there's a ton of stuff going on this week, and we know that The Late Show with David Letterman is coming to a close. One of the closest teams to the New York metropolitan area for full season minor leagues, the Lakewood Blue Claws, are tackling that for this week's promo preview.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to feature that in the column. I mean, on a selfish level, because I'm a fan of Letterman and late night TV in general, and I've really been making an effort myself this last month to make sure I watch every week. So, you know, when work and your personal interests combine, it's great. And the Blue Claws are going to pay tribute to David Letterman, because you should pay tribute to him. He's been on network TV for 33 years. And, of course, they put together a bunch of their own top 10 lists that they'll unveil at the game. Tried to get David Letterman to the game, and now they're settling for trying to get just some other guy named David Letterman to come to the game. And when I talked to them yesterday, that wasn't, you know, set in stone yet, because he's apparently fake David Letterman is apparently just as hard to get a hold of as real David Letterman.
Do they have to contact the fake David Letterman's like agent? Like,
I imagine that's a busy day for fake David Letterman too. Like,
yeah.
Busy day for
the
real
day
one.
Of his life.
Yeah, but I don't think he's a David Letterman impersonator. He's just a guy,
named David Letterman.
So hopefully they can get him out. Yeah, they can go through the proper channels.
I imagine not more than one person has to be reaching out to the fake David Letterman, but minor league baseball teams would definitely be at the forefront of that push.
Yeah, they're at the forefront of fake everything, because real is just too expensive. That's why you see the C and D listers come through, and it's what it is. I'm not knocking it. It's just, you know, there's only so much money in a promo budget, so can't get David Letterman, get a guy named David Letterman. Yeah, I mean, they're just going to keep going down the list. Maybe they'll just find a guy named Dave. Or a guy who's on the DL. I don't know.
A guy who's wearing a Letterman's jacket.
That's what's going to happen.
That'd be fine, too.
Yeah.
If you're a guy named Dave and you can throw on your high school Letterman's jacket, then you can, you know, that's, you're setting yourself up for glory at the Lakewood Blue.
Yeah,
Bulls
come
game.
Through out of first pitch.
Yeah, if you were to make a top 10 list of minor league foods, I think that would be a popular thing. And we had a food released by Fresno this week that is possibly the strangest concoction I've seen in a minor league ballpark. Ben, you want to tell us what the heck the Grizzlies are doing?
Yeah, I wrote about this for the MLB blog Cut 4, which has been highlighting I'm writing for them once a week and highlighting one promo that I think might, you know, capture the attention of America. And the Fresno Grizzlies, this is beginning on Thursday in conjunction with a haunted house they're going to have at the ballpark. It's halfway to Halloween. So in conjunction with all this Halloween stuff, they've devised something called the Frankenslice. And it's literally, I mean, Frankenslice like Frankenstein, but also Frankenslice like Frank, a hot dog, and slice, a slice of pizza. And they found a way to wrap a whole hot dog into the crust of the pizza. So depending on your perspective, it looks amazing or disgusting or maybe a little bit of both. But that Cut 4 article that I wrote today came up, and quite predictably it captured the attention of the internet. I think SportsCenter retweeted it at one point, a lot of other blog posts jumping on the Ben's Biz glory. And I think it's great that they're doing this. I mean, whether or not it's a tasty item, it gets a lot of attention because people like to see bizarre food items.
I gotta say, the one thing about that, it kind of looks like a Frankenstein with the hot dog sticking out the sides. I feel like they drew up a logo, and they actually added deadbolts
awesome.
to the pizza. I feel like they missed the boat by not just having the hot dogs be the deadbolt and the Frankenstein.
Yeah, but I think if you look at the logo, his head is the hot dog wrapped up at the top. I guess they could have, made the deadbolts and the hot dog all in one. But the Grizzlies are a great visual team. They really go the extra mile with their promotions. They got a little chip on their shoulder, I think, losing the Giants affiliation and converting to the Astros. And in conjunction with that, they're saying, that's fine. We're going to do us. We're going to be really creative and unique in-house. We don't need the affiliation to make us a reason fans will go. So even, a Thursday night, halfway to Halloween, something that you could kind of write off, they're going big with it and getting national attention. And, I think it's a great approach.
It made me realize several things about how non-creative I am. Because, I worked in a handful of minor league front offices, but I never came up with anything this good. Because, first I'm looking at it and I'm like, man, the concept is great. The character they drew up is great. And then the fact that it's halfway to Halloween is so creative. But I did not even think about the fact that Frank for the hot dog and then slice for the pizza slice, Franken slice, that's like, I don't have the brain power for that.
It's a lot to take in. I mean, I think some of these things, as disposable as they seem, you kind of have to meditate for a couple minutes to make sure you got all the details. And then unknown details, maybe even to the teams themselves, kind of rise up from within you.
Tell me about the Altoona Curve, a team that is near and dear to my heart, and Mike Passanisi, who hosts basically the world's lone competing podcast with ours, so we'll crush him eventually. Mike and his squad over in Altoona came up with a concept to send their mascot Steamer off into retirement. I used to be a radio guy in Altoona, did not know that Steamer was retiring. I texted Mike the other day, and he said, "Where have you been?" Not paying attention, I guess. But Steamer is going out on a big ship. He's doing the whole Derek Jeter thing. But there's more to this promotion than just Steamer going out. Tell us about how they set this thing up.
Yeah, I think the Curve are another team, like the Grizzlies, that are just really reliable. I try not to rely on them too much, because otherwise every week you can write about some of these teams. But the Curve, Steamer the mascot. I mean, I forget what Steamer actually is, but he's...
Steamer's a boiler from a train of some
thank
kind.
Thank you, yeah. And I knew he was industrial.
Yeah.
But anyway, Steamer's been a mascot for 16 years. He got injured this offseason, and in the wake of the injury, I think it was a knee injury, he decided to hang it up at the end of the year. So the team is making this Steamer's victory lap, not just at, their home ballpark in Altoona, which is called People's Natural Gas Field, by the way. Just, I know you know that, but it's just one of my favorite ballpark names in minor league baseball. But they're also sending their mascot on a Derek Jeter-esque farewell tour where he's going to visit every other Eastern League stadium. And I don't even know if the fans at those stadiums will know who he is, but it's kind of great for him to do that lap, get to see all the other ballparks. I'm sure they'll get photo ops and great social media stuff from all the ballparks. And then he'll bring back all that knowledge accumulated from this road trip and apply it to the Curve's future promotional efforts in his new role as the team's CFO, which stands for Chief Fun Officer.
All right, Ben, did you bring a crooked number of the week for this week?
Yeah, let's shift gears real quick. Always try to highlight one weird thing that happened on the field as well. And this week's crooked number, it doesn't go too crazy into the weirdness. It's just things are very random. And that is that Buddy Borden for the Charlotte Stonecrabs threw a no-hitter, and in the same game in which he threw a no-hitter, the team turned a triple play. And it was a seven-inning game. And my very brief research failed to turn up any other examples of this, but turning a triple play in the same game as a no-hitter. It's probably happened before just because it's baseball and what hasn't happened at some point. But to get those two milestones in one game, and our good friend Sam Dykstra didn't mention this in his recap, but this triple play on May 13th occurred on the 139th anniversary of the first Major League triple play, or the first triple play in professional baseball history, or at least recorded. And that was May 13th, 1876. The New York Mutuals turned a 4-3-4 triple play against the Hartford Blues.
4-3-4 would be a weird triple play to turn, too.
It was the 19th century, so, I think...
They had second baseman playing, where the dugouts are now, and,
Yeah, it was...
They're all wearing weird socks. The Hartford Blues, by the way, The team that was highlighted, I believe, in a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. Is that the Mark Twain book? I think that's where he highlights the Hartford Blues.
That would make sense.
So it would not surprise me one day if, when the Hartford Yard Goats come out with their stuff next month, if there's a Mark Twain tie-in, not going to be surprised.
Yeah, if they have a Turn Back the Hartford Clock Blues. Night or What Could Have Been Night, Hartford Blues. It just surprised me that the Hartford Blues are playing the New York Mutuals.
Yeah.
Because Hartford and insurance, you'd think
yeah,
they'd be the Hartford
Mutuals.
Yeah, that's what I was
thinking. When you said mutual, that was my
yeah,
first.
Wouldn't that be Hartford? Yeah. It was a different time again.
He is Benjamin Hill. Give him a follow on Twitter. He is at BensBiz. You can follow the blog as well, bensbiz.mlblog.com. And now you can read his stuff on Cut 4. I noticed they put you up as Ben Hill, and you're Benjamin Hill on MILB.
Yeah, I've got to work on this discrepancy. Benjamin Hill byline, BensBiz blog, Ben Hill in other places. That's I call myself Ben, so maybe I should just get rid of the jamming.
It's like a radio station. Jamming 92.5 with Ben Hill. Thanks, man.
Hey, thank you. And I'm hitting the road starting Saturday.
Yeah,
so
right.
Check for me in the Midwest. If you're in the Midwest, just look around for me. But I'm starting in Kane County on Saturday night, the Kane County Cougars, and then going on to Quad Cities on Sunday, Clinton, Cedar Rapids, Peoria, Omaha. I might have missed one in there. The order might not have been right, but please look for a lot of great Midwest League content. And I hope to see you at the ballpark if you're going to be at any of those ballparks.
Wrapping up the eighth edition and the first in-person edition of Minor League Baseball's The Show Before the Show podcast, Tyler Mon and Jake Seiner. As always, you can give us a follow. You can rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. You can check us out there. You can check us out on MILB.com. You can check both Jake and I out on Twitter, Jake_Seiner for Jake, as you might assume. And I am at Tyler Mon on Twitter. Benjamin Hill is at Ben's Biz. Sam Dykstra is at Sam Dykstra MILB. And MILB is on Twitter at MILB. And Jake, we got some good stuff coming up on MILB TV this week. We're talking Carlos Correa's like appointment viewing no matter what. So he's obviously one of those guys.
Yeah, Fresno's on TV a bunch this week. And then obviously this is Yoan Moncada week. So if you want to see Yoan Moncada, this is the week to do it. You'll get to see him plenty over the summer, but he's on his first six games, I think, are all on MILB.TV. You can subscribe and get to see him there. It's a nice camera, Greenville, a good view, good chance to see him in action. I know fans have been eager to see him. So definitely recommend that if you are a Red Sox fan or a prospect fan or just a Cuban import fan or any kind of minor league baseball fan.
You can also head to MILB.com and check out this season's Best Seat in the House competition as well. You can use the hashtag MILB Best Seat on social media. And, man, now you know we're in New York.
So yeah, go
for
yeah,
our first horns
first
and sirens.
Yep.
Breaking boundaries on this
yep.
podcast. Head to MILB.com and you can check that out as well. And we're getting like close to, you know, like full-on big voting competition. Like Miners Moniker Madness will be back soon. And like,
oh, that's right. That is creeping up
those
on us.
Most, I used to waste so many innings of radio broadcast talking about my brackets and Miners Moniker Madness. It's a lot of good time. Jake, it's good to see you, man.
It is good for you to be
we'll
here. Let's
again.
Go get you that slice of pizza.
Absolutely. Let's yeah. do it. We'll talk to you guys next week.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.